Shalom ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, Kaf Be'elul, Parashas Kisavo, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 3 September 2015, webcasting from an island of civilization, land of a people that dwells alone. Well, of course, a major story yesterday that should have been much bigger here than it was the 34th Democratic Senator standing by her leader and assuring him that no matter what, his anti-Jew dream is closer to realization than ever. A fundamental change Obama wanted to make in America, I think, was reversing the traditional unique support for Israel in the world, switching sides and supporting the Muslims. And that's what this is all about. He alluded, Obama did, to this goal between the lines of his inaugural address in 2009. His first phone call as president was to the Holocaust-denying massacre demon Mahmoud Abbas. His first foreign trip was to the Middle East, where he did not visit Israel, but not only Egypt, but the Muslim seminary Al-Hazar, where all the great charismatic Muslim terror priests studied. He repeatedly insulted the prime minister of Israel, and I think his greatest ambition for fundamental change was this switching of sides in the matter of Israel. No Muslim power has the capability and joyously proclaimed its desire to destroy Israel more than Iran, and never mind that Iran also wants to destroy Obama's United States. He doesn't care. Iran's top dog combination of Pope and omnipotent king, Ayatollah Khamenei, just published a book called Palestine. I understand is a collection of writings that clearly one of the most important ideas of the author is to be found in the title of the book, Palestine. They're all connected somehow to this idea of Palestine, which is ruled by Islam's number one enemy, according to the Quran, the Jews. And Obama, a shamelessly public admirer of this religion, would surely agree. I've said before that since his first weeks in office, I have been persuaded this is a Louis Farrakhan clone with a much better act, who keeps his Farrakhan-ness under wraps to fool the world, which he has. I think he's the greatest secret agent in the history of secret agents. So this milestone for Obama came yesterday. He is now confident of victory over the Jewish lobby in Congress. It should have been a bigger story here than it was, but, well, of course, we know what the big story is these days everywhere, and that's this massive invasion of Europe by Muslims. This tidal wave of people who are literally running for their lives thanks to Islamic terrorism. And how ironic, the very expression that this president insisted must never be spoken. Islamic terrorism. There's a connection between Obama's reaction just 11 months into his first term after the slaughter at Fort Hood and this tidal wave of humanity. Coming mostly from Syria and Iraq, people literally fleeing for their lives from their fellow Muslims, who daily attain new heights, or should I say plunge to new depths, of depravity. Islamic terrorists, whose description the President of the United States cannot speak. Same president who last January refused to join world leaders in Paris after the Fort Hood-like carnage in the Charlie Hebdo offices, and also denied that the four people murdered in that Jewish grocery store before Shabbos were Jews, cut down by a Muslim, because they were Jews. Barack Hussein Obama said they were just some folks. I'm telling you, this guy is virtually clinical in his ability to deny what he does not want to accept. Worse, not only does he not want to accept the reality of Muslim maniacs on the loose in the world, he wants people to like Islam and pay no mind to that behavior that he considers to be committed by unrepresentative extremists. There's a connection between the situation now in the Middle East, this eruption of hell on earth produced by ISIS, and Obama and Hillary Clinton's support for Islamists against Gaddafi, for Islamists against Mubarak. This villain Obama popped open a bottle found on the seashore and out popped the demon of satanic Islam on the march. The violence in the Muslim Middle East reaches new levels of evil daily. You must have seen at least the still photo, if not actually the video, of those four Shiites in Anbar province in Iraq, chained upside down, hog-tied, doused with some flammable fluid, and then four separate lines on the ground of the fluid were lit at one end, and then they creep toward the men and ignite them and barbecue them to charcoal. And what a coincidence that this Nazi-like sadism comes out of this movement that hates Jews with the same satanic intensity as Nazis. Before LTF's glorious Arab Spring erupted in the Middle East and set the region on fire, Syria had a population of around 23 million people. Today, 11 million of them are reported to be homeless refugees. They have no roof over their head. Of course, they have no work. They're constantly hungry, one presumes. Not much in the way of a change of clothes. And why? Because ISIS are real-life demons from hell. Hell being a place Muslims believe in, big time. Obama, as the nominal head of the free world should, instead of dismissing ISIS as a Jewish varsity, lead a coalition on fire itself with a determination to stamp out this movement completely and immediately. Instead, he has ordered some military response in order to throw scraps at his critics. But otherwise, this plague of diabolical insanity, a.k.a. Islamic terrorism, has been allowed to work its evil and propel millions of people into fleeing hysterically for their lives. I tell you, this guy Obama is bad news. He's a bull in a china shop. Every which way he turns, he smashes things, starting with smashing the peace. The havoc he has caused has been immense. Now, this spectacle, this tidal wave of humanity running through woods, crashing into Europe, the scenes out of Hungary of refugees desperate to get into Germany. Interesting, isn't it, how none of these mostly Muslims flee into their spiritual homeland, the Arabian Peninsula, Saudi Arabia. They all want to get to Europe. Obama has prevented, since he took office, sealing off America's southern boundary. He has intimated that the rich have become rich by luck, inheritance or something, and he finds this unfair to the poor man. The rich must therefore be grateful for their good luck and redistribute their wealth to the unlucky, to the victims of racism, etc. He also likely feels that Americans are selfish, exclusivist, holding on to the good life in America. They should be more inclusive and accepting of others and let them join the club. So Obama has left the door open. In the meantime, in Europe, they're building walls all over the place, even if Obama won't. The Hungarians have built one along their border with Serbia. The Bulgarians have built something along their border with Turkey. The Greek island of Kos, of course, is overwhelmed with these refugees. Greece has also built a barrier along a part of its border with Turkey. And, of course, there has been that crazy situation in France at Calais with refugees trying to smuggle themselves into the UK by the Channel. And all this is happening because the forces of satanic Islam were unleashed by Barack Hussein Obama, as much as anybody. He has crippled U.S. military might in general and in the region in particular. He has become, he and John Kerry, an agent of the Iranians, Iran being the most recognized active supporter of terrorism worldwide, one of the three states President Bush 43 called the Axis of Evil. And again, I wind up thinking that when Obama dreamed of fundamentally changing America, this was the change that topped the list. He was going to turn America into an ally of Iran and no longer be its nemesis. In his inaugural speech, after demoting Jews and the family of communities that make up the United States, he immediately expressed his wish to turn over a new leaf with Islam. And this is the result, this massive flight of humanity out of the Middle East, thanks to the unleashing of violent Muslims behaving at their most absolute diabolical worst. A couple of weeks ago, Robert Spencer posted on PJ Media, citing a New York Times piece on girls turned into sex slaves when captured by ISIS. He quoted one who spoke of her rapist, who apparently in all seriousness each time he raped her, said he was praying to God. And you know what? I buy that. Because these agents of the devil worship the devil as God. Mousab Hassan Youssef said more or less the same thing. You know, the son of the head of Hamas in Yosh, at the height of the suicide bomber attacks here. He apostatized and left Islam because he said its God is a cruel God. So heaven help us when the President of the United States of America worships that same God.
סגרה עליי דרכי ואם אמת ובנפשי על כל הרגעים תודה אני שומע מנגינה היא מתבהרת את מתוך העננה שקט הכובל כאילו מאמינה בינתיים עד שבאת לתוך חיי לא היה לך לאן לברוח את הטעויות שלי לעולם לא ייתנו לך לשכוח עד שתשוב אליי המנגינה
One good news story today here in Israel, besides the lovely news out of the States that Hillary Clinton's server installer is going to plead the fifth, she's finished, was word of a UN report by the UN Conference on Trade and Development, a.k.a. UNCTAD, that said that within 5 years, Gaza could become uninhabitable. Said the report, quote, "The social, health, and security-related ramifications of the high population density and overcrowding are among the factors that may render Gaza unlivable by 2020, close quote. And the report also described the vast destruction Israel inflicted on the Strip last summer and, of course, fingered the blockade as a major factor in the miserable economic situation there. And I say, let us pray it does get worse. The Gaza Strip is this wholly artificial rectangle of land whose creation was and remains part of the Arab war against Jewish independence. It should not exist. Never in history was there such a rectangle along this beachfront property. Israel should do whatever it can to hasten the demise of the Strip, which has been an open, bleeding wound, a thorn in our side in every one of our years of independence. But what caught my attention was a catchphrase used here, constantly used whenever describing Gaza, and of course, in the MSN, the misery of the people there, inflicted on them by Israel. The Agence France-Presse story in Ynet.com said, quote, "Gaza, a tiny enclave of just 362 square kilometers, about 225 square miles, squeezed between Israel, Egypt, and the Mediterranean Sea, that is home to some 1.8 million Palestinians, counts as one of the highest population densities in the world," close quote. Yeah, those poor, poor Palestinians squeezed into this narrow parcel of land, cheek by jowl, no room to move. It's like being 24-7 in any major railroad station in the great cities of the world at rush hour. It's a constant rubbing of shoulders and bumping into one another, crowded like, I don't know, the Warsaw Ghetto. It's a little known fact that Gaza is so crowded you can't even lie down to sleep at night. You know that Gazans all sleep standing up because there's no room. Gaza is so packed with people, it has, in the cliche, one of the highest population densities in the world, close quote. So, thanks to the miracle of the internet today, I Googled up Gaza area and also Manhattan Island area to check its population as well. Indeed, I got the same number of people as this Ynet dispatch, 1.8 million for those living in Gaza, and for Manhattan, almost 1.7 million, about the same number. And as for the area of Manhattan versus the 225 square miles in Gaza, Manhattan is 23 square miles. Got that? Manhattan Island is home to about the same number of people as Gaza on land one-tenth the size of Gaza. It's as if the common anti-Jew working in journalism parrots zombie-like the cliche that Gaza is one of the highest population densities in the world. Well, it's not any higher than Manhattan's, and I assume not any higher than the density found in Tokyo and Mexico City, Mumbai, Hong Kong, Shanghai. In a word, this cliché is another one of those minuscule, seemingly innocuous corruptions of language, of truth. It's anti-Semitism polluting the atmosphere in a way we are rarely ever aware of. Anti-Semitism is defined by yours truly in three words, lying about Jews. And this cliché is a lie, like so many others, a lie meant to smear the Jews with guilt for causing harm and doing evil to non-Jews. In this case, the perennial, dare we say, eternal ancient Palestinian people that no one ever heard of before the late 20th century, after thousands of years of recorded history in the Holy Land. This business of Gaza, 10 times the size of Manhattan with about the same number of people as one of the most crowded places on Earth, is yet another failure of Israel's public diplomacy that never ends. Israel's public diplomacy is that, yes, Israel wants to see a Palestinian state in Judea and Samaria, but only under certain conditions. Israel never challenges the lies, never combats the anti-Semitic bilge that the Arabs and the PA spew out. Anti-Semitism is lying about Jews, I say, but I admit the description needs even further precision. Anti-Semitism on one level is lying about Jews, accusing us of evil we do not commit. But on another level, there are less lies, which implies the liars know they're lying, than hallucinations. The entirety of anti-Jew Nazi propaganda was one gigantic hallucination about the Jews. One of my favorites was Hitler's belief that Deutschland was under attack from the east by the Bolsheviks and the Kremlin, and from the west, the capitalists and the White House, and how else otherwise to explain their alliance against Deutschland? Because the Bolsheviks and the Kremlin were all Jews, as were all the capitalist bankers on Wall Street, who gave the White House its marching orders. In fact, in his mind, both American capitalism and Soviet communism were false front appearances. Behind them lurked the Jews, fooling the whole world with the seeming antagonism between capitalism and communism, with socialist Nazi Germany in between. Well, here's another example of that truth about anti-Semitism as functionally a mental disorder characterized by hallucinations of Jewish evil that have no basis in reality and truth. Here's another one, but first another selection from Aharon Ozer's lovely new disc.
נחמו עמי, נחמו עמי, יאמר אלוקיכם. 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 דברו הלב ירושלים, דברו הלב ירושלים. נחמו עמי, דברו הלב ירושלים. אמר השם, אמר השם, את מי צריך לנחם? האם לא אותי צריכים לנחם? מי שנשרף ביתו, מי שנשבו בניו, את מי צריך לנחם? נחמוני, נחמוני עמי. נחמו עמי, נחמו עמי, יאמר אלוקיכם. 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 דברו הלב ירושלים, דברו הלב ירושלים. נחמו עמי, דברו הלב ירושלים. אמר השם, אמר השם, את מי צריך לנחם? האם לא אותי צריכים לנחם? מי שנשרף ביתו, מי שנשבו בניו, את מי צריך לנחם? נחמוני, נחמוני עמי. מי שנשרף ביתו, מי שנשבו בניו, מי שנטרף צונו, האם לא אותי צריכים לנחם? נחמו, נחמוני עמי. נחמו, נחמוני עמי. ומחיתי, מחיתי דמעה מעל כל פנים, ושבו בנים לגבולם.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So, Ruth Sheva reported today on an incident in a cafe in Brussels, home of the nastily anti-Jew EU bureaucracy. It seems an EU official physically attacked a female co-worker and called her a dirty Jewess. Ruth Sheva here was itself citing Haaretz, and for the curious, the name of the cafe is the Italiano, which is near EU HQ. It seems that this 50-year-old woman is herself a department head in the European Council, and she saw a man in the cafe holding a metal plaque honoring Mussolini. She, apparently upset by this, commented to the man that his hero was still a dictator, and he shot back, "Dirty Jewess, Hitler should have exterminated all Jews, just like Jews today are exterminating Palestinians." The guy then hit her on the head with the plaque, slapped her, grabbed her by the throat, and started to choke her. Other patrons at this point jumped up to stop him, with him shouting, "All Jews should have been killed." And the attacker evidently was no stranger, but known to be another EU official, a man from Malta. He's the president of the EU Labor Union Generation 2004, whatever that is. Sounds like another bureaucratic scam. Clearly, in this case, it's anti-Semitism as a hallucination. In this case, a double one, or maybe not. The woman attacked was reported not to be a Jewess. That's his first delusion. But sure, for sure, his charge that the Jews were exterminating the Palestinians is a hallucination. And what do you know? This accusation, this fantasy, nonetheless, is the fuel in the nuclear core of Jew hatred in our time, and all the trouble Israel has with the nations of the world. This incident, in a microcosm, seems to be a clear-cut case of classic Jew hatred by a man who is off the rails. But in fact, this is the gospel around the world, isn't it? The animosity to Israel in the UN, in the EU, on Fleet Street in London and Times Square in New York, is rooted in such baseless beliefs about the evil Jews allegedly commit, or have committed. This violent lover of El Duce, Mussolini, is seen as some kind of a nutcase, yes, but in truth, his belief is not much different from the lies that animate the editorialists in the prestige newspapers in the UN and the EU and in London, Paris. That's why I wrote my book. The Palestinian cause is one big fat lie. A hallucination on a par with the age-old mishigas about Jews having to murder non-Jews to make Passover matzah. This is a delusion still rife in Arabian Islam. In other words, Israel's public diplomacy is mostly useless, for it never combats the aggressor for who he really is. The aggressor is not the collective body of aggrieved Palestinian patriots, the victims of Zionism's conquest. The aggressor remains the Islamic collective that cannot tolerate, religiously cannot tolerate, the very existence of Israel, no matter what it does or what its borders, and also the Arab collective, a people known from the days of Abraham as conscienceless thieves, robbers and kidnappers who hunger for the wealth we Jews have created here on what was, 150 years ago, wasteland. They envy the wealth, these Arabs, that we have created and have made up a fairy tale to explain their desire to take this wealth away from us.
Ah,
na na ta na na
Last item, the last segment, ended with a word about Israel's public diplomacy, which I find the result of a woeful misdiagnosis of our enemies' hearts and minds. And that is connected to the recurring incidents here of Arabs vandalizing the ancient Jewish cemetery on the Mount of Olives, probably the oldest active cemetery in the world in history, where four prophets are buried and countless greats in the Jewish people down the corridors of time. Early yesterday, some barbarians targeted the plot where Prime Minister Netanyahu's own father is interred. And this follows last Monday's small riot at Rachel's tomb outside of Bethlehem, where Ishmaelites were throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails at people come to pray. And I say this happens because Israel has never wanted to be, you know, too Jewish, too religious. So it has never put its foot down and inform these violent Hamites that no behavior like this at a Jewish cemetery or place of worship will be tolerated. And he who acts this way, who insults our religion and our holy places, will be shot dead. Indeed, twice this week, the Prime Minister was reported to have met with top security people to deal with the recent series of aggressions in Jerusalem and in around the Mount of Olives, and also along Route 443, the alternate main road, besides Route 1, in and out of Jerusalem, toward and from the coastal plain. What's the old psychological cliche, which is also true, cliches are truth: if you want others to respect you, you must first respect yourself. And the reason for this endless violence is that it's connected to Israel's milquetoast treatment of those who attack us in our holy places. Vandals trashing graves in France get more attention here than the Arabs engaged in the same aggression in Jerusalem. Instead of fleeing from our identity, rooted in our ancient religion, Israel might do better by embracing it and telling our neighbors and the whole world they must respect our religion, and if they don't, they're going to get it. Okay, that's it for this Thursday, this week, and I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Me'eretz Yisrael.